This is the 14th of December, 1980, Taos, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning.
Our first question. I sometimes sense the presence of a loving being, but always am aware of the distinction between me and it. And when I want to be one with it, I draw back because I feel unworthy.
All right. I think in order to answer this question in its deepest form, I will have to say something about meditation, because after all, this is what we ultimately are coming to. Any time that you find you have entered into an energy field that is unfamiliar to you, in the sense that it is not in your conscious mind, therefore not consciously with you at all times, one of the main problems is a fear that comes over. It can come in the form of feeling unworthy. It can come in the form of feeling just terror. It can come in many ways. And it isn't so important to worry about undoing the reason for your fear. I do not suggest that all of you wait until you feel worthy before you become one with vaster consciousness. It will never happen. You will always find something that will prove you unsatisfactory in the eyes of yourself, and certainly in your ego's eyes. So what we're really talking about is the fact that you have to come to understand that you cannot use the mind in order to jump into the unknown. The mind will not take you there. It is impossible. So what then is meditation? Meditation, which is an experience I imagine this woman has during meditation, that is my inference by this statement. All right, there is the whole phenomenon of why you meditate is simply because if you look very carefully at your thoughts, at your world, at your life as you have projected it out, what you are doing is using a certain portion of your being that you call your conscious mind. And it takes you through your world. And if you're very, very conscious, if you're very, very specific, if you're very, very concentrated, the world applauds you, because after all, concentrated people are the ones you want working for you and so forth. But the fact remains that those skills that you have taken so many years to develop are useless to you in the world of meditation, because it's a totally different skill that is now being required. And this is why it has been said by some that the more intelligent you are, the more difficult your journey. And it is for this one reason. When you become an intelligent being, what you are saying is, I have become more and more and more alive and concise in one field of endeavor. One field. I keep limiting myself, and I'm getting better and better at this one particular thing. All right. Now, when you talk about meditation, you have to reverse the process. What you are saying now is, that part of me that I have so well developed has to now give over, has to expand, has to let down, has to explode into all the other part of my being that is always there. It isn't something that comes in now all of a sudden. It is always there, has always been there. So that part of the being now has to become the focus of your totality of consciousness. And this is why the intellectual, has the difficult road, because their success has been preconditioned by the fact that they are very good at narrowing down their concentration. And now what is needed is a diffusing. You understand? Why do you love children? Because they're so diffused. They go from one to another, jumping, no connection, this, that. They can be in one end of a room and they can hear something at the far end of the room and they will laugh because they have heard it. Why? Because their ears are better? No, because their consciousness is not narrow. They're able to hear that. And they will know when the dog is barking, and they will know all these things, because they have not yet been conditioned by the world to narrow themselves down to this point which will give them expediency in the physical world. I am not suggesting you all become diffused in your work. Obviously, you have to live in the world. I am saying, understand that that is a skill. And when the skill is useless, you drop the skill and you become diffused. All right, now, what is the answer to this woman's problem as I understand it? When this feeling overcomes her, it is mind that is still very much involved, a limitation. And the only thing that I see as any help at all is for her to stay steadily and steadfastly right in that feeling of unworthiness and not allow the mind, which is its tendency, to pick it up and begin to take it to its logical conclusion of, yes, you're unworthy in A and B and C and line all of her garbage cans up for her to observe. My friends, you are all filled with garbage cans. Are you not aware of that? There's not a one of you that doesn't have garbage cans, and so what? I say it doesn't matter at all. But if you're going to continue to look at your garbage cans, you will never have the courage to leap and say, all right, forget it. Enough. But it is the mind that will keep saying, ah, yes, but don't forget. Don't forget this. Don't forget that. I say to you, look, your mind runs your life. And the more successful you are, the more you know your mind runs your life. Because that is a hallmark of an efficient person. And you glory in this, the Western world. And that's fine. I have no objection. But do not take this as a wonderful trait when you move into a realm where it isn't required, which is in the realm of meditation. And so, to this woman, who I sense is a very strong and very dependable and very intelligent woman, has to understand that all of those tools now have to be laid aside. And what is called on is to stand very steady in the light of her own feeling of inadequacy, to keep with that feeling of inadequacy and to allow it to simply be the motivating energy that then moves her into another realm. She stops. All of you stop when you come to some kind of imagery. You stop. You say, all right, I will go no further. I will go this far, but that is it. And what you're still saying when you can say anything like this is that your mind is still in control. Do you understand what I'm saying? If your mind were not in control, there would be no necessity to stop and say anything because you wouldn't be thinking. It is your thinking process. And this is why all of the great teachers keep saying, you must let thinking go. You must let thinking simply go on its way, and you must stand or sit or whatever as the observer of that. And so the answer is always coming back to the same. Feelings of unworthiness arise not out of deep unworthiness, but out of mind. Mind is filled with unworthiness. It is filled with all kinds of things. It doesn't matter what devil you present to your conscious mind. Forget them. They're all the same. They're one and the same. Stand back. Be the observer of those thoughts. That is the only answer. I cannot see how she will get out of this without being very, very watchful of all of those thoughts. Do you understand? Has that been said clearly? She is not here, and I really need her to understand this. Her only hope is to keep allowing that part of her conscious mind to go on its way, feeling unworthy and so forth, but at the same time, to begin to ground herself very, very strongly in the part of her being which I call the witness, which she well knows of. So it is simply a matter of, as witness, there is no garbage cans in the witness stand. When you are a witness, there is no garbage, because it isn't mind that witnesses. It is mind that has the garbage cans in it. Witness has none. It has none. They are not there. Witness is that piece of your beingness that is the bridge between your conscious mind, which you call your daily thinking process, emotions, and so forth, and that vast part of your being, which you call your deep source, which is all one, never separated, but in your mind differentiated out by your thinking mind. So when you step back from thinking mind, you can only go back into the witness. That's the next layer back. We've discussed this before. The next step back from thinking mind is witness. To tell you that that is not the last step, I hope, does not discourage you. It is simply to tell you to walk on. Because the step behind the thinking mind is that of witness. There is another step behind that, but there's no use to talk about it until you've reached it. At that time, I will be very pleased to discuss it. But there is another step behind that. But we must take ourselves as we are and where we are, and not fool ourselves one iota. If it is necessary to just stand as witness, then that is what you must do. And this is what I suggest that she do. And it is possible from the stance of witness, which is present in her being, and not somewhere out on Neptune, but very present in her being, there is that place, that ground, that foreground that she can stand on as witness, and that is her only hope. And that I would say to all of you, she may have this devil of her own making, but each of you have your own. What is yours? Whatever it might be, don't worry about it. It's bound to be thus. The mind wants you to keep on thinking. The mind enjoys it. And the more unworthy your thoughts can be, why, the more holy you think you are. You see, it's one of those terrible reverse psychologies. The more unworthy you think you are, the better you think you are. Does this make sense to you? You see, and this is why the sadness of it is that it makes sense. It should be, you should be standing up and saying, well, how can I be worthy if I'm unworthy? It makes no sense. Rationally, no, it makes no sense. These are patterns pounded into you from the smallest up. From the smallest up. Conditioning of your children, conditioning of yourselves, and you still remain in that conditioning. I do not suggest you quit conditioning your children. We would have chaos. But the answer is this. You must learn to make a differentiation in your adulthood, and if you can, to help your children make the differentiation between times when it's necessary for such conditioning response and the times when you can just put it aside, put it away as you would your winter coat when you walk in the door, and then let your consciousness diffuse. Do you know what I mean? One of the reasons they say women have a better chance, excuse me, gentlemen, better chance for illumination is because they have diffused consciousness. Now, a woman who does not have diffused consciousness doesn't qualify for that. She may have a mind that is very like a man's mind, which is, in its traditional sense, one that can keep going on the same point, getting narrower and narrower, getting more and more expedient and better at it and so forth, and being able to bring in the bread and the cheese and the milk with much more expedience. And the woman just diffuses her consciousness throughout the house, takes care of the children. You know, it's the old story. The woman knows what's going on in the children's playroom and outside with the dog and down the 40 acres with her husband's tractor. I mean, she is supposed to traditionally have access to all these areas. Why? Because her mind is vaster? No, because she has what's called diffused consciousness. The only difference I see between male and female is this one characteristic. And males can be diffused and females can be very, very narrow. It has nothing to do with sexual performance. It has to do with state of consciousness. And some women have very masculine minds, which means that they are very narrow, that they are able to perform very well, and they glory in this perfection because it brings the satisfactory results. Now, the sad thing about this is it works so well in the world that we now have the strange phenomenon of all the women saying, oh my goodness, that's the way we should be. And so now they're trying to become narrow and narrow and less diffused. Do you understand? It is unfortunate. Because what I would recommend for male and female alike is something quite different, which is this, that they understand that they have access in their own being to a narrow band of consciousness called concentration, and that they use it expediently for their jobs, for whatever it is before them, and that at the end of that expediency, they say, ah, now it is time to drop that away and simply begin to enjoy. Because, my friends, if you're looking carefully, you are not enjoying deep concentration. Watch yourself. There's a feeling of constriction. There's a certain, what can I say, alchemy that goes on when you are deeply involved in your work. Yes, I agree with you. When you're very single-pointed and you're working for it, that's true. But you take that same narrow single-pointedness through every single moment of your day, makes you a very unbalanced person. So if we would speak in terms of balance between male and female, how lofty all these subjects, I see it simply as this. Are you able, as a balanced person, to move between a concentration that is very, very finely focused, and then to drop it, and to allow your being to expand and to take in everything that comes to you? Everything that comes to you. You're sitting in a room now, in your office. You have been very, very concentrated on a line of figures. Someone knocks at the door. What is the normal response? They come in grudgingly, grudgingly. You take your mind off of your figures, and grudgingly you look at this intruder into your world, and you somehow try to fit that intruder into your new world. All right? What is this saying? What is this saying to the person who has walked in? Do they feel joy, love, acceptance, compassion, or do they feel exactly what you want them to feel? They have intruded. All right. Why not both? Why not, now that you know that the moment is finished, to be concentrated? Because how do you know? Someone has entered. A human, another being, another part of the one is there. There, before you. Do you say, come back later? What do you say? All right, they enter. A child enters. You're very busy. A child enters, looking. A friend enters. Hello? Your wife knocks. Hello? What do you say? Your husband, what do you say? Your friends, what? Most of the time, you go in your mind, it's not convenient. Meaning, I have so narrowed this down, and I'm doing so well. Do you understand that feeling? I'm doing so well. I've got it all together. Everything is going. And this is an intruder. And after all, this is important, isn't it? I mean, these figures are important. This human standing out here, no. Not so important. We all know it's much more important to do well in the world than to love one's fellow man. Everyone knows that. Expediency, my friend, is killing your love. I repeat, expediency is killing your love. Love is a now thing. Love is a now thing. A child stands there. You cannot say, come back later. Will they come back later? Well, maybe, but with the same expectation, the same joy, the same hopings? No. It's not convenient. And then framed in their mind is the words, well, that person doesn't care. And you say, oh, of course I care. Do you really? Let us be very literal of what you are saying. Your actions are speaking for you. What are you saying? You are saying this job that I am doing with these figures at this desk, at this table, or wherever you might be, outside with this whatever, is more important than the stopping of that process and the turning and the sharing with you. It's precisely what you're saying. Whatever your mouth is saying, your being is saying something quite different. And do not delude yourself to think that children are so stupid that they cannot hear you. Or wives, or husbands, or friends. Name them, doesn't matter. So when you have this ability to be so concentrated, do you also have the wonderful ability to drop that concentration and to allow yourself now to truly move out in an expanded state of consciousness to embrace that person that's standing there? And to really, with all of your being, turn your awareness to them and say, yes, yes. And see what it's all about. How long will it take? 2 minutes? 3 minutes? And then, back. But do you understand what I'm saying? Expediency does not allow this. Because after all, what you're doing is so important. Is it so important? This is the question you have to keep asking yourself. What is the definition of a balanced human being? That is my definition. The balance between the male and the female in the moment. Not in some, excuse me, some Jungian terminology of the symbols that run through your mind and your dream state and all that. That's all very well. Do that if it pleases you. But the fact remains it's much simpler than that. It is right here. Is your consciousness diffused when it needs to be, and is it honed to a fine point of concentration when it needs to be, or is it not? Are you able to flow with loving acceptance and freedom between these two states, or are you so rigid that you cannot? Find out about yourself. When you talk about a masculine woman or a feminine man, what are you really saying? What are you really saying? What is the quality that we're discussing? Look at it carefully. You will learn much about yourself. And then ask yourself, do you have this? Which one do you miss? It isn't well to have either one in abundance, you know. It is well to have both. And that is a balanced person, able to be very focused when it's needful and very diffused when that is needful. Now, what you're going to find out if you're doing it carefully is when you are being diffused, when you're opening yourself to everything that flows into your life, everything, you begin to participate of a much more open, wondrous, abandoned feeling. Do you know what I mean? When you're sitting here and your consciousness has reached into the area around you and then out toward the mountain, when you just by your own will, if you will, extend it on and on and on, somehow you begin to lose that sense of the rigidity of your own being. You're now able to sense yourself in a vaster scale. And this is what I recommend. Why is it said that the Divine Mother rules the universe? Why is it said? Because it is that quality. Do you understand? It is that quality that we're talking about. Of wondrous, diffused acceptance. The Divine Mother role is that of accepting all things. If you speak in the terms of the I Ching, she is the receptive. She is always the receptive. And this is exactly what the female quality is all about, is the receptive. So please be aware of these things as they move through you. Be aware of the joy of being receptive to everything that flows into you, no longer deciding what you will accept and what you will not. You hear a knock on your door, be receptive, open. See what happens. And most of all, watch what happens within you to see what your barriers are. When the person is revealed as who they are, is it someone you want? Is it someone you don't? Is it someone you have time for? What are you saying? And this is a very important question. Ultimately, what are you saying? Are there any questions about that?
I've been questioning definitions because I find that what we think is the definition, and we look in the dictionary and the dictionary says blah, is not really what it is at all. And I found that to be very true as far as what you say. It's what, in my past experience of Bartholomew and the tapes, is you're just defining things rather than, you know, putting out methods or things. You're just saying, okay, these are our new definitions. And these ones, to me, are valid rather than the ones that you perceive.
Now, the next hope is that one day you will simply drop all need of any kind for definition of any kind. And this is what I would see as the ultimate end. I've told you before, everything I have said and everything I ever will say is an absolute lie. All I am trying to do by my lying, by my conniving, by my manipulation, or whatever you want to call it that's going on here, is to try to bring you to the point where you say, enough of this, I'm going to try on my own. That is all I am trying to do. All I am trying to do is to amass as many confusing, chaotic words together and throw them at you so that you will be sick unto death of all these words. And you will say, enough, I have read enough, I have heard enough, I have thought enough, I am finished with it, I am going to experience or forget it. And that is what I want. To either experience it on your own or forget it. But to stand in this middle ground of holiness, of listening to all of this and reading all the books and so forth and doing nothing, that to me is the suicidal point. Because your ego has it the best of both worlds. Your ego says, ah, look at what that person is doing. I'm not speaking of you, I'm speaking of the whole situation. The ego says, how wonderful, look how spiritual I am, I'm reading all these books, I'm doing all of this thing. At the same time, nothing is put in practice at all. The only thing I have ever said that needs to be done is to stay awake for 24 hours a day, whether you're awake or asleep. That's all I've ever said. You can take it any way you want. At the ultimate end, that is all I say. Are you awake or are you not? And when I say awake, I mean to go back to the definition we just left, which is, are you able to diffuse and take in more and more and more of everything, of all the parts? You keep saying something about yourself, which I do not believe. You say you are this body, and I say you are crazy. You are crazy to accept that definition of yourself. You are crazy. What you are is ever-increasing, ever-multitudinously moving, beautifully alive bands of fields of energy that move and impinge on one point which you call yourself. But arising out and extending out in vast arrays of wondrous, spectacular movement are rays of that same being. And you sit in the center of this as some kind of little mole, and you say, this is all I am, this is all I am, this is all I am, whereas you are all of this otherness. And I keep saying to you, if you would just quit talking and thinking about yourself in this mole hole and start realizing that you are the hole and the mountain and you are the sky and you are the earth and you are it all, instead of this limited thing, then you would no longer need to define. How are you going to define when you're out in the vast cosmos? You cannot. Words fail. And that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that words will utterly fail. The only way I can see for words to fail is to cram them into your craniums to such a profusion that you finally say, I'm sick to death. But what you usually do, when you're sick to death of me, you will find another person to burble at you. And it will be different enough to catch your attention. Ah, good. Well, we'll listen to this one. And then you will listen to those burblings. All of our burblings are ultimately useless. Lies, lies, lies upon lies. They are tricks. They are tricks to get you to know who you already are. And if you don't think that sounds absurd, to find out what you already are, is not that a strange statement? But it's all lies. Do not count on anyone who knows anything to tell you the truth. If they began to tell you the truth, first of all, you couldn't understand it. Second of all, they couldn't put it out. And third of all, you'd quit. When I tell you, and I do tell you this, there's nothing to do. You have nothing to do. It's just to sit and wait expectantly of what you know is going to happen. How does that feel? There's nothing to do except to sit and be expectant. Just to sit and await. That's all. When I say these things, two things happen. People become anxious because you're doers. You're strivers. You are end-oriented. Do you understand? You are end-oriented. And if I tell you that the very fact that you are striving for an end is the thing that keeps you from experiencing it, your mind begins to, I hope, back on itself and become very confused and very chaotic, and I hope so, because this is the truth of the situation. The thing that is keeping you from yourself is your desire to know yourself. Then what is the answer? The answer is to simply sit in total expectation that something undefined, unknown, unspeakable is going to take place. And that's all. That is what meditation is all about. I will give you as many gimmicks as I need to give in order to put your little busy minds at rest, so that your mind will feel content with something. What do you think a Zen koan is? It is nothing more than keeping your mind busy so that the real business can take place. That's all it is. Just keep it busy. Keep it busy. This is all I do with all of the gimmicks that I give you. I could take your gimmick and give it to his and him's to yours and yours to... I could mix them all around. The only important thing is your mind busy? Does your mind feel that it's doing something? If so, that's wonderful. Because now, mind goes on, and if you have gotten deeply into your own being at all, you will understand what I mean. Because mind is going on, but at the same time, is something else not there? All right, that something else is what we're talking about. Mind is... Don't think, please, that mind is going to dissolve into nothingness. After all, mind is energy, and energy is present in you. After all, you use it. How are you going to start your car? How are you going to get to work? Da, 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 da. All right, you have to have mind. I'm not arguing. I'm simply saying, because your car is helpful, you don't live in it all the time. You don't bring it in the house. You don't take it to bed. You don't take it into the kitchen. You just leave it where it belongs and go about something different. Well, so is it with mind. It's simply a car, simply a method. But let's keep it busy. And while it's keeping busy, then if we're very, very clever about things, we can begin to start to feel that otherness, that wonderful otherness, that wondrous otherness that somehow views mind, sees thought, sees emotion, sees all of that going on, but knows so wondrously now that something else is abundantly there. That abundantly there feeling is there all the time. The thing that clouds it is the chatter of your mind. So, when we keep the mind busy with thoughts like breathing, so forth, the mind is content. Ah, now I am doing something. Ah, look, I'm doing something. And all the time, behind it, the wonderful solitude of the quiet oneness starts to move forward. Starts to move forward. And then you start to understand. And you start to feel. And you start to know. You start to become part of what you already are. And this is the way it works. And then one day you say, I didn't need that. It was just a trick. And you'll come to me and you'll laugh and you'll say, it was all a trick. And I will say, yes. But without that trick, would you? Could you have sat there day after day? Could you? Because unless you give mind something to muss upon, however simple, it will pick its own mussing. And let me tell you, when mind decides to be mussing, it is exceedingly mussing. So we simply give it something. Just watch your breathing, say I. Just watch the in and the out, say I. Just concentrate on who am I, say I. All the same. All meaningless. All words out of ego and mind self. But do not underestimate. And this is where so many spiritual seekers fall off the edge. Because out of their arrogance, they say, I am going to go the rigorous, austere path, and I will sit there and I will have no thought. And I say, good. If you can sit there with no thought, you don't need a path. You don't need a path. But if you cannot say that, then let us be honest one with another. And let us find that way which most keeps your chances at maximum. Knowing that they're tricks, does it really matter? Because ultimately you have to know this. Yes, Mary?
How do you stay there?
I'm sorry?
How do you stay there?
It's a matter of repetition. And this is the time at which the question was, why, how do you stay there? I've spoken before, and it really is extremely important to understand that what you are doing when you move into that deep source is whatever is most familiar to you, whatever is most exciting to you, whatever is most useful to you, you're going to abide in. And what we are trying to do, my friend, is to reverse the process for you. Right now, the human being says that the most useful thing is what? His mind. After all, if I tell you that your body is ill, you will not be upset. If I tell you your mind is ill, what are you going to feel? How would you feel if I said your mind is sick? If I said your stomach is ill, you will say, fine, give me some medicine. If I say your mind is sick, what are you going to do? How do you feel about that? Oh my God, my mind is sick. And you will spend millions of dollars to make your mind unsick. Why? What is the difference between your mind and your stomach? The reason is you think you are your mind. You think you are your mind, and you are not. You know you're not your stomach. You know that. You know you will continue to be who you are. Even if they take your stomach out and throw it in a trash can, you are still yourself. You know that. But your mind, if I take your mind away, well, where are you? You would say you would be dead. A definition of life and death. Is the brain working? The body can be almost gone, but if the brain is going, life is possible. The problem arises with misidentification. You think you are the mind, you are not the mind. And I tell you, that when we reverse the fields and you start sensing this otherness, the vastness, more and more and more, and identify with it more and more and more, you are going to be easily able to let go of the fragmentary mind stuff and to stay more and more rigorously in that part of your being. Whatever is expedient, my friend, and most comfortable, you're going to do. Right now, it's your mind. Practice long enough. Live enough in that space of oneness, of that space of sourcedness, and you're going to become so familiar with it, so rejoiceful in it, that you, of your own will choose to move into that part of your being without any gimmicks whatsoever. Do you understand? It's a matter of practice. And this is why I say the only thing that will win the victory is 24 hours a day. Because we have to reverse the field. Do you understand? It's a matter of polarity. You are so used to going outward, outward, outward. And now I'm saying, wait, let's reverse it. Now take all that existing energy. Don't change that energy one bit. I don't want any changes of behavior, diet, attitude, all that nonsense. I don't care what you're doing. I say the energy is there. You are taking your energy and you're pushing it out. And now I say, let us reverse it. That's all I'm asking. Why do I not ask you to clean up your act? Because I don't care about your act. Why substitute one act for another all the same? It's only energy in motion. Don't clean up your act. Just turn your energy around. That's all I'm saying. Take that same energy now and take it within. Use it. Just turn it within. Back into center. Back into center. And how to do it? By being inside your vehicle. We're back to where we began. If you live as many hours of your day inside this physical vehicle, attached to whatever area of consciousness pleases you, depending on your own development, and abiding in it with all of the power that you can, staying within self, looking from here outward, you're going to start to make the transition. If you understood how much of your time was spent outside your body, you would understand what I mean. We're back to where we began. You look at someone, are you looking at them from your own vehicle or are you looking at them from them to you? Think about that. Is your conscious awareness on their face or is it in yourself? Your conscious awareness. Is it playing with the planes of their face? Watching for responses, so forth, shadows, nuance, or is it so grounded in this vehicle here? There's a difference. When you're driving your car, where is your awareness? Is it out there on the road? Or is it grounded within the vehicle and then going outward? Where is the point of beginning of your consciousness? Everything goes back to that. So what is the answer? It is to stay within your physical vehicle. I mean your awareness to be grounded in your physical vehicle as many hours of the day and the night as possible and viewing all things from this position. This position. It sounds simple? Try it. Just try it. Everything changes. And it takes an effort, and that is the only way to win the victory. Know yourself. What is that? Very wordy phrase. Yes, is it time? All right, the old Socratic statement, know thyself. What is that talking about? It depends on who you're asking, does it not? But basically, the answer comes. The answer comes. There are so many selves, there are so many faces, there are so many feelings, there are so many changes, there are so many faces of self that go on. And when you stay within your own being, alive and alert to knowing who you are in all of your faces, in all of your changings, through all of that, if you're paying close attention, arises the thought, the feeling, the knowing, ah, yes, 'tis true, all changes, but something remains exactly the same. I am the same today as I was 10 years ago in one sense. You ask an elderly person if they feel any different, they say no. The eye of me is the same. Why does a woman at 60 still feel much like she did when she was 30? Because the I of her is the same. And that I-ness, that same wondrous, ever-continuing, never-changing I-ness, remains there. But you do not find the I-ness existing until you have looked and seen the changing faces. And when you've seen enough changing faces, when you have identified with as many of the centers of consciousness to realize that they are all simply part of the whole, then you finally, when you have stayed quietly within, you finally come to know something, which is, yes, I see and sense all this change, but inexplicably there is something very similar, something holding it all together, some ground upon which it all rests, and that is what the I is. And it is through that knowingness that you sit very strongly and watch the movings of the faces of the many eyes that come and go, with yourself grounded deeply in the one I self. And this is what I mean when I say know thyself. In order to know the ultimate self, you must understand the ever-changingness of all of the other selves that come and go. You must. But at the same time that you watch and sense all of the change, you sense at the same time the oneness. It must be so. And that is why I say, 24 hours a day, my friends, it cannot happen for you otherwise. So we are back to the question, do you want it? Or do you just want it? Because there is a big difference. How to want it. How to take that step. That leap. And sadly, the answer is the same that I have given earlier. You simply have to keep watching. You simply have to stay inside, no matter how much you want to go out. Now, I don't mean outside of your house. I don't mean I want a pack of renunciates sitting around feeling superior because they've renounced the world. That isn't what I'm talking about. I'm talking about your physical vehicle, your own consciousness. You have to be sitting there nauseously 24 hours a day with your ever-changing consciousness. And if you don't think that is nauseous, please try it. If you do not think that the tedious, tedious thoughts that go through your mind 24 hours a day are boring, then I suggest that you really look at your thoughts, because you will not find them as exciting as you think. You will not find your opinion of others as uplifting as you might think you do. You will not find yourself as worm-like as you might suspicion. If you watch your thoughts very carefully, you are going to find out what you're trying to do. And what your mind is trying to do is to convince yourself and everyone else that you are the best. Even when you are the worst, you are the best. You're going to do everything you can to see this. Please be aware of that. You're going to manipulate yourself and others, and it's all to keep proving to yourself that ego is supreme, your ego. Even when it's humble, how supremely humble it is. Watch it carefully, my friends. When you finally see that, when you finally see that even your highest, most exalted motives rest on a very firm foundation of, aren't I a good little boy or girl? Aren't they pleased with me, whoever they might be? When you finally see this, you say, is that really worth living for? Is that really worth spending the rest of my life doing? And that is when the question becomes real. Until then, you're playing. Until then, you're playing, because half of you is absolutely delighted with yourself. It is until you are no longer delighted with yourself that you can throw yourself off. Do you understand? If you are pleased with yourself, if you like what you are, if you like your thoughts, if you like all of this business, then you're going to stay with it. I repeat, if you enjoy, if you feel it is worthwhile, you're going to stay with it. And you're going to stay with your mind until you know your mind for what it is. And how are you going to know? You are not going to go by going to a psychoanalyst. I assure you of that. You will find out what's in his or her mind, not what's in your mind. And the only thing that matters is what is in your mind. Watch what's in your mind. When you see clearly what is in your mind, when you watch your responses to others, when you see it all with absolute clarity, then you say to yourself, no, thank you. No, thank you. There must be another way to live. There must be a more compassionate way to unite with my fellow man. There must be something better than this. And when you know that, then you are an earnest seeker, and not 1 minute before that. If you are pleased with the way you love others, if you are pleased with the way you think of others, if you are pleased with the thoughts that go on in your mind, then you will never be free. Because the propulsion fluid that throws you out of it comes from your own repugnance at the limitations of what's going on in your own mind. Because you know within your being that somehow you are capable of total compassionate love and understanding. You know that. That is built in. It is built in to you. You call it the God self, call it whatever you want. It's built in. So when you really see mind and it reveals itself as it really is, when you watch your motive for everything you say and everything you do, when you become like the hawk on the mesa watching, then you participate fully with that part of you that says, there's something better possible here. But it isn't until that moment that you really do it. Until then, my friends, you will play. You cannot be free until you know yourself in all of your smallness. And the minute that you know yourself in all of your smallness, you will turn into the arms of the vastness. I have told you this. God is a jealous lover. And it is so. As long as you love yourself in this limited, finite way, then that kind of experience waits outside the door. But when you decide to throw open the door and leave all of that behind, you fall into the arms of the deep source. But you will not do it until you are sick to death of what you are doing now. A man who has a job that he adores is not going to quit it. Especially for something that he doesn't even know exists. But if he is fed up, if he has seen the limitations of what he is doing, then it doesn't take any energy at all to move away from it. So we're back to your own responsibility, are we not? And no guru who walks the earth is capable of doing that for you. You must do it on your own. And that takes a lot of watching. Are there any questions?
You've often said if you want to do something, really get into it and do it all the way. Joanne and I have a friend who's a heroin addict and has been for over 15 years. She calls us occasionally and asks for help, and we sometimes find her repugnant, but we we see the God within her, we think, and feel that she sees it in us. And we see that she is no more addicted than we are in many ways, and perhaps we can learn from her. But is it right to, if you have an addiction, just to go into it till you hit rock bottom? She said, I'm at the bottom, Don. I can't go any lower. Is that valid to do that?
Is she at rock bottom, my friend?
Well, her true nature is not, but the mind and body seem to be.
Look. Curing oneself of any addiction, I don't care what it is, only comes from looking so carefully at that addiction that you see it truly for what it is. Not for what it represents symbolically in your mind, but for what it truly is. And when you see what is truly there, then there arises a turning away. And the reason that I tell you that the only way out of any addiction is to be 100% in it is that you have to see, it is the same thing that we said a moment before about the mind, when you really see what is going on, awakened to it, then you can let it go. All right, now what is the difficulty? If difficulty is very clear in a heroin addict, they cannot watch clearly. Do you see the problem? If you are a heroin addict, you are not in control of your watching faculty. It is not possible. If you are an alcoholic, you are not in control of your watching faculty. If you are on drugs, you are not in control of your watching faculty. That is precisely why you are on drugs. Because you don't want to watch. You don't want to see. You don't want to be here now. That's why you drink. That's why you take dope. That's why you do all those things. Because you don't want to be here, yes.
Is that why we're on mind and body?
Of course. Of course. I told you, you set it up so you could experience separation. And that is what's happening. The difficulties of all of these rules in a case of an addiction as a heroin addiction is simply this. The very quality that would pull her out is the very quality she does not have access to. And that is why she's taking the drugs. She doesn't want to have access to any of those areas of her consciousness that have any control over anything. She doesn't want to control anything. Anyone who drinks does it because they don't want to be in control of things. They want to let things go. They want to let them all slough away. They want to be out of that place where they are responsible. So what is the difficulty? The only answer I see in many of these cases is that they do die. You tell me that's morbid. Perhaps so. But the answer is, if you go far enough along on the continuum, if you destroy enough of the body's capabilities of responding back, of rejuvenating itself, if you take enough of the mind and fill it full of perforations, if you take the aura of a person and fill it with so many holes that it is sieve-like, so that things are coming in without any control whatsoever, oftentimes, my friend, the only answer is to end it through death and to walk out the other side and hope for a better awareness. But this isn't your suggestion to her. You do not go to her and make these suggestions. I'm simply saying, if you want the truth of it, oftentimes taken to its extremity, this is the obvious solution, and they find it out themselves, and death ensues in its own natural way. What then are you to do? At the moments, if there are any, where she is lucid, when she is in control, then the only thing that can be said is to, as much as possible, give her tools to get her awareness honed down to some kind of capabilities in those moments of lucidity The problem is, when she begins to look, she will have the same spontaneous repulsion, added to by her actions, added to by her thoughts of herself, added to by what's happened to her, and then she will take an avenue of escape and be back where she started again.
She has experienced her true nature, I believe.
So that's very possible. That's very possible.
Could that be a motivation to her?
Is it?
No.
All right. You see, we are where we began, which is that the only way to make the true nature the most stable thing in your life is to continue to immerse yourself in it. She's not choosing that. She is choosing actually to go out in the absolute other extremity of it, to get as far away from her true nature as she can. Because when you start understanding your true nature, you have to be right here, and where she doesn't want to be is right here. That's not where she wants to be. And this is the only place you're going to find your true nature is here. This is why I say be careful, those of you who take marijuana, those of you who drink, be careful. Because if the line that you start wobbling on becomes very, very unclear, and all of a sudden one moment you're in control, and the next moment you're not. And when you fall off of that edge and start doing it more than you should, taking more than you should, when your body is trying to push you in one direction of clarity and your choices are pushing you in another, be aware. Watch out for this. Because you see, no one starts out to be an alcoholic or a drug addict. It just is a gradualness that takes over and takes over. And then the fog gets denser and denser, and then you awaken, and perhaps it's too late. When people say it's never too late, I applaud the sentiment, but I often find it irrelevant to the situation. Sometimes it is too late, in the sense that that person's power base, we're talking about power base, that their power base has been so drained away by the taking of drugs or of alcohol or whatever it is, that they are no longer able to re-amass the power base. Now look, my friends, I have never deluded you. I have never told you to stop doing this, that, and the other, but I have never fooled you. I have told you that the taking of drugs and the overdoing of alcohol makes perforations in what you choose to call your aura. And what that really means is that things can come in as well as go out, and you have no control. It's like a sieve. Energy comes in and energy goes out. It's a two-way street. It just moves in and out. This is the only reason why I disapprove of these things, not because there's anything wrong with them, but when you tell me that you're on the path, when you say you want to know your true self, and I say, but my friends, the very thing that you're taking in the drugs or the alcohol, is filling you full of holes, and therefore not allowing you to gather your power base, that's all I'm talking about. Do you understand what I'm saying? When you make holes in this energy field around you, which chemical drugs, all of these things, they make holes. Too much alcohol, they make holes. Things become weakened. They're soft spots, if you will, in the fields around you. And what that means is that energy can come in and energy can go out, and that means that you are no longer in control. And then when I say to you, build your power base, you're helpless. How can you build your power base when you have these holes that the energy is just going out? You build it, it goes out. You build it, it goes out. The only way to do it is to stop whatever it is you're doing to a long enough time so that, those energy fields can again become strengthened. And then when I say to you, build your power base, you understand what I'm saying.
So that's the only way to clarify those holes, it's just the wave.
Exactly. And that's the hardest part, because it's that interim of time. It's that interim of time, and it takes, that's where the courage comes. You have a foot in both worlds, you take one foot out of the drug world, and you say, I will not do this. But on the other hand, the heavens do not open up. You do not know the blessings of all the goodies and all that, nothing has come for you yet. And that is the difficult time, is it not? When you have to stand on your new ground, and it's very bare. And there's nothing there. And the gods do not speak to you, and your heart doesn't sing with joy. In fact, all you have is a lot of physical infirmity to remake now by building your body back to some kind of balance of health, and to calm your mind down and to resist the desire to run and do it again. And all of this is where the hard ground stands. And it's very bare. It is very bare. And the only answer is, if you stand there long enough, the grass will start to grow, the trees will start to grow, the birds will return, the sky will be clear, the sun will shine, the rain will come, all of this will happen. But you have to stand on the barren ground until those holes have had a chance to mend themselves. Your physical body mends itself, does it? Don't you understand? If your physical body can mend itself with such great ability, is it not possible that those other bodies that surround you are not able to also mend themselves? But you're not going to mend your cut if you keep cutting it every day. You know, you keep, you know, taking a laceration and lacerating it again and again every day and saying, why isn't it getting well? Why isn't it getting well? The answer is because every day you're opening it up again. Well, so it is with all these other things, all of your other so-called bodies. You know, the etheric body, the astral body, we could go on forever. Well, actually not forever, but we could go on for quite a while. All of those bodies, it's the same thing. Stop doing what it is that's rending them asunder, and they will mend themselves. But until your arm mends, there will be pain. There will be anguish. There will be concern. Is it going to work? Is it going to get well? Or am I going to have my arm cut off? There's a question. And it is all of that doubt and then self-loathing and so forth that falls into that barren ground. All right, so what as a friend can you do? You can stand on that barren ground with her when she's there. Until the time that she has decided to stand on that barren ground with someone, whether it be you, whether it be medical help, whether it be someone, and to stand on that barren ground with her without any access to that which is ruining her life, then you cannot really help her. You can make patchwork jobs. You can take the band-aids and stick them up on the aura. Yes, you can do that. You can make her feel that you love her, and that is no small thing. But if you're talking about freeing her from herself, the only time is when you say, I will stand on that bare ground with you. And nothing you do will turn me from you. But we have to stand on that bare ground, which means no more of whatever it is. Do you understand? And that is a matter of her choice, not yours. But when that choice is there, and when she says, I am ready, or when you ask, are you ready to give it all up, we will stand with you, no matter what. Then we're talking about the possibility of change. But that desire must come from her. It cannot come from you. Do you understand? And on that ground, you can help. If nothing more than hold her while she goes through her agonies, that may be all that you can ever do, is to hold a mirror of another way.
That's all been done. Should we try it again?
You see.
Well, you try again with us.
Of course. I do not discourage you at all. If that's what she wants, if you are ready, if you feel you can, then do it again. But every time you do it, just know that the end is not important, that the doing of it is. It doesn't matter if she is cured. It only matters that she has reached out and that you have joined her and you have said yes, and yet again yes, and yet again yes, I am here. We will do it again. And maybe this time, the victory will be won. Who can say? You cannot ever quit. It is the law on every level of understanding. If those who are stronger abandon those that are weaker before they are as strong as they are, no progress is ever made. And this is the law. It applies in my world, and it applies in your world. You do not abandon those that are weaker simply because they fail. You simply say, fine, let's try again. Oh, fine, let's try again. Fine, let's try again. The quality of compassion knows no boundaries at all. The quality of compassion is not given as a result of good behavior. The quality of compassion is given because there is nothing else that you have to give. It is the thing that you are, therefore you can only give that. You are nothing more than infinite compassion. That is what you are. And so, when you give of infinite compassion again and again and again, it is not some wonderful thing you're doing. It is simply being your true self. Because your true self is nothing other than constant, true, unending, non-judgmental compassion. That is what God is all about, if you would like to put it in those terms. Divine energy does not withdraw itself because you were a bad little boy or a bad little girl. Divine energy is always present. Compassion is always present. And you can call it up at any time. I think we've gone on quite long enough. I thank you all for coming. And I wish all of you, it could be said that, and it has been said, that I will not be here for the Christmas time. I would like to say that that is not possible. If you are with me, I am with you. If your thoughts and minds turn to me, I am with you. Wherever the woman might or might not be, if your thoughts and hearts turn to me, then I am with you. And please make no mistake about that. You have some time. Use it well, my friend. You will not regret it.